Winkin', blinkin', and nod. Take one.
Winking and blinking and nod when I'd sail off on a wooden shoe. Sail in a river of crystal light into a sea of dew. Now where are you going and what do you wish? The old moon asked the three. Well, we're going out fishing for herring fish that live in the beautiful sea. Nets of silver and gold have we said, winking and blinking and nod. The old moon laughed and sang a song as they rocked in their wooden shoe. And the wind that sped them all night long ruffled the waves of dew. Well, the little stars were the heron fish that lived in the beautiful sea. Now cast your nets wherever you wish, never afeard are we. So sang the stars to the fishermen three, winking and blinking and nod. All night long their nets they threw to the stars in the twinkling foam. Then down from the skies came the wooden shoe, bringing the fishermen home. 'Twas all so pretty a sight, it seemed as if it could not be. And some folks thought 'twas a dream they dreamed of sailing the beautiful sea. But I shall name you the fishermen three, winking and blinking and nod. Winking and blinking are two little eyes, and nod is a little head. And the wooden shoe that sailed the skies is a wee one's trundle bed. So close your eyes while mother sings of the beautiful sights that be, and you will see the wonderful things as you rock in your misty sea, where the old moon rocked the fishermen three. Winking and winking and nod.
Now, once upon a time, there were three Simon sisters, Lucy and Carly, who you heard then, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, in a cute little song which Lucy wrote, her first ever song, Wink and Blinken and Nod. And there was a third Simon sister, Joanna, who was very grand and went on to sing opera. Welcome, Lucy.
Thank you very much. She's here with us today,
and she's brought along a couple of friends. We have Michael Kozarin, who was the original music supervisor and music director on The Secret Garden, which was Lucy's big success. And we have in the other room Philip Quast, who's joining you for old time's sake, who was Archie in Secret Garden and in fact played Neville in the Australian production of it. Three-time Olivier Award winner. So, Lucy, take us back, because hearing you and Carly on that demo is very nostalgic for those of us that kind of lived through that era. I can almost see you and Carly, actually,
right.
Visualize you singing
right.
that song.
You must have looked very cute. We had matching dresses. In the early days, we only carried one guitar and traded it off between us when she knew how to play one song and I knew how to play another. So I played Wink and Blink and a Nod. And she, the language that developed between the three of us, we do have a brother, but he was younger and he didn't sort of enter this sphere, was always musical. So we would, you know, be in the sharing a bathroom and getting dressed for a date, and we would sing to each other. It was opera. We didn't speak to each other. We'd say, Joey, get out of the way because I want to curl my hair. Carly would sing, it's my time. It's my time to put on mascara. It's my time. And so this was just the way we talked. It was the way we developed our musical sensibilities, but we didn't consider it at that point. It was just what we did. And we grew up loving musicals because family, friends. My father was a book publisher. He founded Simon & Schuster. And he was a great pianist. And so he published Oscar Hammerstein's lyrics. So Oscar Hammerstein was a friend of ours who would come around. Another very dear friend was Arthur Schwartz, who Uncle Arthur.
That wonderful show, Tree Grows in Brooklyn.
Tree Grows
in Brooklyn. It's one of my favorite.
Try to make the man love me. And Arthur's wife was a singer, Kay Harrington, and that the first time I ever heard that song was when Kay played it in our house. Arthur played it for her. This is from my new show.
So you wanted to do musicals, clearly, or did it come to you later that you wanted to do musicals?
No, it didn't. I mean, we were folk singers, and then we were rock singers. First of all, we did opera. I mean, that was our great love. I would go to the opera we had a box at the opera, and as little kids, our parents would trot us out and to watch opera. And then Carly and I sort of enjoyed doing opera at home, and we quite liked Porgy and Bess. And Carly and I would act it out, and I would sing, "I love you, Porgy, don't let him take me." And Carly would go around on her knees and sing, "What you think I is now anyway, to let that dirty scoundrel steal my woman." And we did this. We were, 8 and 10 doing this, "I love you, Porgy." And we just, it was singing songs that we grew up with, and it was very much part of our family life.
But it's a characteristic of you, Lucy, that you'll always sing something. I've known you a while now, and every time we discuss something, when in doubt, sing it.
When in doubt, sing it, and often I don't even realize I'm doing it, much to the embarrassment of my kids. "Mother, what did you sing then?"
So there was a natural melodist in there.
Yeah.
I mean, that sort of... So at Prairie, the first show, the natural melodist started to bloom. And tell us a little bit about that, because you're going to sing a song from it that's become kind of significant for you and a lot of other people.
Yeah, the song I'm going to sing is a song called Prairie Rose, and it's at a wedding. And actually, the reason I'm in London is to celebrate Jeremy Sam's wedding to this wonderful American girl, Jean Gottlieb, and they asked me to sing this song. It's a song Carly and I sang to my daughter when she got married, and my daughter and I sang it to my son when he got married, so it just always seems to be this wedding song. So we'll play a little bit of that for you. Michael will play it for me while I sing, so I don't make pianistic mistakes, which I'm known for.
They actually don't get more homespun than that one, Lucy.
Yeah, it also really sounds Western. It is. It comes from the West, and my voice just goes into that immediate Western twang. I also realized as I was singing it again right after Wink and Blink and a Nod that there is such a relationship, a stylistic relationship between those two songs.
So. Mm. Well, The Secret Garden was an altogether different deal. Big hit on Broadway. Should have been a big hit here.
we tried.
a really marvelous adaptation of that children's novel and a wonderful score. I told the story on this show before of how I came to hear a note of it. I was actually in the States driving along with a friend, and he just put Lily's Eyes on the CD player. And I was thinking to myself as it was playing, before I said anything, I was thinking, Pearl Fishers. This is very, very individual. It really did sort of strike me. And then we got to this disguise modulation. It just blew me out of my seat, and I said, "What is this?" And he said, "It's from a new show called The Secret Garden," and that's how I started to listen to it.
She has her eyes. The girl has Lily's hazel eyes. Those eyes that saw him happy long ago. Those eyes that gave him life and hope he'd never known. How can he see the girl and miss those hazel?
She has her eyes. The girl has Lily's hazel eyes. Those eyes that closed and left me all alone. Those eyes I feel will never ever let me go. How can I see this girl who has her hazel eyes?
In actual fact, I mean, they were looking for a composer, weren't they? All the other elements were in place, and you were kind of the last piece of the jigsaw to come in, Lucy, weren't you?
That's right. I was recommended, actually, through Prairie. People had heard Prairie, and so Marcia Norman, who wrote the book, and Heidi Landisman, who was the producer, came to me and said, "We're doing this," and I was very interested because, of course, I loved The Secret Garden as a kid and had read it to my child. So much of me comes through what I read to my children. So I sort of had a sense of where that landscape was, that Yorkshire landscape, and also being a folk singer. I did a lot of, you know, Scottish and Irish and English folk songs. So I immediately went to this place, sort of haunted. This is the first lyric that Marcia had.
Who though could it be?
Maybe it was mother calling out, "Come see." Maybe it was father all alone and lost and cold. I heard someone crying. Maybe it was me.
Singing, who though could it be? Maybe it was Lily calling out to me. Maybe she's not gone so far away as I've been told. I heard someone singing, maybe it was she.
Maybe it was someone I could find and have a cup of tea. Maybe it was someone who could bring the tea and come find
I
me.
Heard someone crying, though I can't see who. Someone in this house with nothing left to do. Sounded like a father left alone, his love run cold. I heard someone crying.
Maybe I was dreaming of a garden growing far below. Maybe I was dreaming of a life that I will never know. Someone's gone without you. I can't be found without you. Maybe where are you? I need you. I have learned to learn to do a number.
Someone knows.
When you're first starting a musical, and especially if it's based on a novel that is known and loved, you have to do honor to the characters and the original material. And what is very important to me is to find the right voice for each character. And in finding Mary Lennox, obviously that's the most important character to find because she's the main character. And the first song that Marcia and I wrote for Mary, we liked very much, but it was too cheery. So we had to change it to another song. But Michael and I were going through our notes and we found that original song.
Oh, that's
great.
We
thought that might be fun to hear.
Yeah, let's
this
hear
is a song that when Mary comes to to Misselthwaite Manor. And actually, Daisy Egan, who was the New York star, much preferred this song, but we'll sing a bit of it so that you'll see why we chose the other. Michael?
What is a home? Does it have a father, hat upon his head? What is a home? Does it have a mother waiting by your bed? Do you build a fire to sit beside when supper's done and then? Do you find a story in a book and listen while it's read? What is a home? Does it have a cake for a special day? What is a home? Does it have a seat by the window bay? Do you drink your tea as you sit outside and make the evening air? Do you know it's right? Do you know it's home by who you know is there? Where is my home? Please tell me.
I'm an adult, so I don't sound really like a child singing it, but it still does sound too cheerful for Mary. So we went to this other song, which none of us likes as well, but it does have the right feel for Mary, and we'll play a bit of it so you'll understand how fledgling composer and lyricist got off to a wrong start.
You know, it's funny, I actually like it. You know, I'm not so sure I don't prefer it. It has that slightly, you're right, it's darker. But it's very haunting. And at that point in the show, she's a very lonely little girl. She's just arrived. She's in the bedroom, isn't she?
In New York, she was in a different place than she is in the London production. In the London production, she's out in the garden. In the New York production, it was sort of as a dream.
Although, if I can say, I think it moved around to the New York production, if you remember. It started early in the first act, and then we decided it was in the wrong place and moved it to the top of the second act.
But you know, this
right,
question
yeah.
about the position of songs is an interesting one. For example, Lily's Eyes, the big high point in the show, shifted between New York and London. In London, it opened the second act, which was really a way of blowing the socks off an audience, you know, straight into the beginning of the second act. So it had a different kind of dynamic there. But in New York, am I right, it was much earlier. It was after A Bit of Earth. Now, Philip, we've got Philip Quass with us now. And why do you think the move made sense?
Well, it's a very interesting thing because I'm privileged because I've actually done both productions. I did a version of the New York production in Australia and I played the other brother and I came here and so I've done both. And the thing is, it is such a fantastic song. I think people thought it should go later in the act, so it has an emotional response. It's almost an 11 o'clock number in that sense. But because a secret is revealed, the other brother is... he confesses that he loves his brother's wife. I think they thought that secret was revealed too early. Mm. And if that comes, there's nowhere for the relationship to go. So by putting it in the second act, it just delayed a little bit more and explains why that brother is the way he is.
Strangely quiet, but now the storm simply rests to strike again. Standing waiting, I think of her, I think of. Strange this Mary, she leaves the room, yet remains. She lingers on. Something stirs me to think of her, I think. She casts a spell. All night we hear her sighs, and now a girl has come who has her eyes. She has her eyes. The girl has Lily's hazel eyes, those eyes that saw him happy long ago, those eyes that gave him life and hope he'd never known. How can he see the girl and miss those hazel? She has her eyes. The girl has Lily's hazel eyes. Those eyes that closed and left me all alone. Those eyes I feel will never, ever let me go. How can I see this girl who has her hazel eyes? In Lily's eyes a castle, this house seemed to be. I, her bravest knight, became. My lady fair was she. She has her eyes, she has my Lily's hazel eyes. Those eyes that loved my brother, never me. Those eyes that never saw me, never knew. I long to hold her close, to live at last in Lily's eyes. Imagine me a lover. I longed for the day she'd turn and see me standing there. Would God had let her stay. She has her eyes. She has Lily's hazel eyes. Those eyes that saw me happy long ago. How can I now forget that once I did to be in love, alive and whole, in Lily's eyes, in Lily's eyes.
Wow. If ever a number defied the audience not to remain passive, that's it. It's a real showstopper. I mean, Philip, you were saying that it was one of the reasons you did the show.
Well, it is the reason. You hear that song and you go, I've just got to do this, because the chance to sing with another baritone, they don't come along. It's very rare.
Okay, now A Bit of Earth, which is a key song in the show, because it's when Mary comes to Archie, you know, having been so detached from her. He says, you know, as a child, is there anything you need? And she responds rather startlingly, I'd like a bit of earth. A crucial point in the show and a crucial number in the show, and you get this lyric, A Bit of Earth. Well, give us the whole lyric, Lucy, and how did you go about setting it?
Well, Mary goes to Archie when she realizes that she's found that she loves the garden, and the person that loved the garden before Mary came along was Archie's wife, Lily. So it totally confounds Archie that this little child has come to him and said, that what she wants is a little bit of earth. And the lyric is a bit of earth. She wants a little bit of earth. She'll plant some seeds. And it shows Archie's being totally bewildered. And how do you write that? And I just sat down. A bit of earth. She wants a little bit of earth. She'll plant some seeds. So that the emotion just rolled over itself.
Yeah, there's no other way of setting it.
No
really,
other way. I mean, there was no choice. That's how it had to go. But, of course, the interpretation becomes something that is quite different. And having the joy of working with Philip twice, because, as he said, he played Neville in Australia, and I went and I saw him there. Mm-hmm. And actually, because of that, when we came to casting in London, Adrian Noble and I said, well, Philip Quast would be wonderful. And I said, but you know, Philip is a low voice, so, but we could change the keys for Philip. And I know that Philip would just bring so much to this role. So Philip came all the way from Australia to sing Archie in this.
So Philip, yeah, you're going to sing this for us now, but I'd like to know really what the character is going through at this point, because there's a thought process here. It's kind of crucial to the role.
Well, Lucy said she changed the keys, but it's still high. well, it's exactly what she says, and it's interesting that when a composer decides to work out how the tune, that it's dictated by the sense of the lyric. And just by speaking it, she actually wants a bit of earth. She wants a little bit of earth. Suddenly, that dictates the melody.
Actually, as you're speaking it, you can hear the melody.
You can hear the melody.
Right. It's
and
impressive.
The sense comes from, and that's why it's a pleasure to sing. And it's a turmoil, because suddenly there's a little bit of light. A light flickers through his window because he's lost his wife, and suddenly there's a little glimmer of hope. And this the song is oscillating between what she needs, and maybe his life could change as well.
Let's hear it.
A bit of earth. She wants a little bit of earth, she'll plant some seeds. The seeds will grow, the flowers bloom, but is there bounty what she needs? How can she chance to love a little bit of earth? Does she not know? The earth is old and doesn't care if one small girl wants things to grow. She needs a friend. She needs a father, brother, sister, mother's arms. She needs to laugh. She needs to dance and learn to work her girlish charms. She needs a home, the only thing she really needs I cannot give. Instead she asks a bit of earth to make it live. She should have a pony gallop across the moor. She should have a doll's house with 100 rooms per floor. Why can't she ask for a treasure? Something that money can buy that won't die when I give her the world. She asks instead for some earth. A bit of earth. She wants a little bit of earth. She'll plant some seeds. The seeds will grow. The flowers bloom. Their beauty, just the thing she needs. She'll grow to love the tender roses, lilies fair, the iris tall. And then in time, a bit of earth will freeze and kill them all. A bit of earth. A bit of earth. A bit of earth. A bit of earth.
That's a wonderful song. You know, it's the bridge, Lucy, Philip, that gets me. Why can't she ask for a treasure, something that money can't buy? And you actually find a bit of melody that money can't buy there. I think that really takes off. There's a little bit of ecstasy in that middle section. The crucial song comes at the end of the show, where Lily returns to Archie, who is on the point of suicide, and basically says to him, "You have to let me go." It's very moving. How could I ever know? In fact, only a few weeks ago at the proms, Renee Fleming and Bryn Terfel sang it as an encore, Lucy. How about that? You really have made it into the high echelons there.
It was almost as thrilling as having Philip singing it.
Oh, thank you, Lucy.
The song actually changed, did it not? It started off as being Lily speaking to Archie, and then the bridge section became really crucial in the song, Lucy, didn't it?
The story of writing this was wonderful. Marcia wrote the song in a short amount of time, gave me the lyric over the phone. I wrote it down. She could barely read it to me because she kept crying. And then I immediately said it. It just, that's how it goes. And I said it in maybe 20 minutes, a half an hour, and called her back to play it for her, but couldn't get through it because I kept on crying. So it was probably 2 days before, we both heard the final thing. But in the show, we realized, again, we didn't know quite where to place it, but finally realized that it belonged in the end as her way of telling Archie he has to go on with his own life and go to the garden. So we needed to make this a longer song. So we wanted to make it a duet with Archie, and we also wanted to bring him back to the garden. So we extended the song by using a bridge of The Girl in the Valley, which is the first song that Lily and Archie sing together. When I write, I write with my voice. So we went back to that part where Archie says, "All I need is Lily there in the garden. All I would ask is care for the child of our love. Come go with me, safe I will keep you. Where you would lead me, there I would go." And then they go into the big duet. So that was sort of taking from one song, adding it on to another one to make this huge finale.
Oh, how could I ever know? How can I know where you'd have me go? How can I bear not to dream about you? How can I let you go?
How could I ever know?
All I need
is there in the garden.
All I would ask
is care for the child of our love. Come, go with me, safe I will keep you.
Where you there I would,
there I would, there we would,
there we will go.
You know, when I hear that song, that wicked key change into the entry of the male voice, which is kind of cause you making a virtue out of a necessity of the change of voice, it really grabs you somewhere.
Only Kaz knows how to do that.
But you're pure desperation, I assure you.
But you know, Lucy, you do realize that song could be the great legacy you leave. I think it is such a great song. Really. Philip, you can go back to the garden now, and we'll see you in a while. In fact, we're doing a whole show with Philip Quast very soon, so that's something to look forward to. Wuthering Heights. Gosh, you really choose these kind of creepy northern windswept subjects, don't you? You had a very different take on this, though, Lucy, didn't you? This is a show, one of a couple of shows that are waiting for productions. I mean, people don't realize what composers have to go through to actually get their work staged very often, particularly if you're not working to commission, if you just have an idea and you go with it, and then you have to look for backers and producers. This is one of those, isn't it?
Well, this is, yes, it is. Marcia Norman and I, Marcia, who wrote The Secret Garden with me, decided to do Wuthering Heights after we did The Secret Garden. And we had to wait until Jane Eyre had gone through New York because it's pretty much the same territory. So we're just getting back to it now. But the way Marcia and I wanted to tell the story is that Wuthering Heights is a legend. Kathy and Heathcliff are known by everybody. And so we decided to tell it as a legend, that a contemporary group would sing, a contemporary, like the Chieftains. Heathcliff, in the book, is referred to as a gypsy. So Marcia and I decided to make him really a gypsy. So he's sort of the outcast. But he's a rocker. So his first song is...
I was born on the back street, gypsy blood in my veins. Left to die on a back street when they put my mother in.
So he gets that rock feeling. When Kathy, the most important song, of course, in this show is Kathy's song, which is I Am Heathcliff. It comes from the most important prose that Emily Bronte wrote. And so it was very important to Marcia and me to be able to capture that song, Kathy saying to Nellie, Kathy just being unhappy because she's just accepted the marriage proposal of Edgar Linton, a man that she feels she should marry, but doesn't really want to. So she says to Nellie, "If I were in heaven, Nellie, I should be extremely miserable." "Because you are not fit to go there," I answered. "All sinners would be miserable in heaven." "But it is not for that. I dreamt once I was there." And I won't read the whole thing, but she says, "I was only going to say that heaven didn't seem to be my home, and I broke my heart with weeping to come back to earth. And the angels were so angry that they flung me out into the middle of the heath on top of Wuthering Heights, where I woke, sobbing for joy."
Was this the key moment you actually found her voice?
Yes, and it's more than the key moment to find her voice. It's saying, if I can't capture this, I will not do this musical because it's too important, too well-known, too beloved a speech. So this is Juliet Lambert, a wonderful New York musical singer, singing on a demo.
I dreamed I was in heaven, but heaven wasn't my true home. I wept and begged the angels send me back where I belong. And the angels were so angry, they hurled was holding me.
Kathy tears away from Nellie and runs into the night.
Kathy! Oh!
Whatever souls are made of, ours are the same. Whatever I was called at birth, I now proclaim.
Okay, Lucy, something very different. Fanny Hackabout Jones. Now, there's a title.
And it's a musical based on a novel by Erica Jong called Fanny Hackabout Jones, which immediately tells you that it's pretty raunchy, and it is. And it's being developed by Manhattan Theatre Club, and, you know, sometime in the next 10 or 20 years we expect there to be a production, the way things go. No, I'm kidding. Hopefully it'll be next year. But it's a very different form for me because it's funny. It takes place in 18th century England, and again we try to put our style onto it. Fanny Hackabout Jones is a female Tom Jones. She wants to be a writer, and she travels to London by herself because she's been seduced and abandoned by her foster father. So she goes out into the woods alone, and she comes across a highwayman who is Lancelot, and is Robin Hood come back to the earth to help the world. But he is gorgeous, and Fanny falls madly in love with him. But he has only one mistress, and he will not take her advances. And he sings the song, "One Mistress of I."
What man would rather watch the moon than give into the feelings the moon engenders? It isn't natural.
What isn't?
This air of distraction, this quiet reserve, is it mere lack of interest or pure lack of nerve?
Neither, dear Fanny. If either were true, I would say so.
Okay, so pray do.
I have never been, nor will I ever be moved to kiss that pretty mouth of yours. There is only one thing that stirs my blood. 'Tis the thing that ignites me and flames and excites me, the thing I can't help but pursue. It has nothing to do with the fondness I feel for you.
What thing is this that fires your blood when I cannot?
Mention the poor, and I pant with desire to rush to their aid. Show me the downtrodden masses, and I am undone. Say the word justice, and lust overcomes me, setting my senses aflame. One mistress have I, and justice for all is her name. Give me a cause, and driven with passion, I reach for my blade. Give me a wrong, I can right, and I rise like the sun. Blind to the charms of sweet-scented bosoms, to paramour, harlot or wife, pleasure will pour, justice for all is my life.
I have the cure.
Till aroused by the sight and the pitiful plight of the poor. Oh, sigh me no sighs of sensual longings and secret delights. Spare me the silky caresses so skillfully done. Into the arms of the wretched and ravaged I leap without question or shame. One mistress have I.
We'll see by and by.
One mistress have I, and justice for all is her name.
Do you know, today, finding that sound world for an individual show seems to me so crucial. We're living in times where I hear endless musicals which are kind of written in this generalized Europop way. Very few shows have their own sound, very few composers. I always cite Adam Gettle's Floyd Collins as a great example of a score which actually uses the vernacular and the idiom that it's dealing with to make the score, you know, bluegrass music elevated somewhere else. And you try to do that as well. In fact, it leads us on to a big project, because this has been very close to your heart for some time, and you'll perhaps fill us in on the background. Nothing less than Dr. Zhivago.
Yes, that one. It's sort of like carrying a cross on my back, I feel, to be doing Dr. Zhivago. But it is a movie that is very important to me, because when my husband and I, many years ago, started living together, I wanted to get married very much. And he had already been married and had cold feet. So I had to wait. And we went to see the movie of Dr. Zhivago. And a couple of days later, he said, "Lucy, will you marry me?" And I said, "Of course I will, David, but why now? Why are you asking me now?" And he said, "Because that schmuck, Dr. Zhivago, let that beautiful woman out of his life, and I'm not going to let that happen with me." So I became Mrs. David Levine very happily. But then when I was looking for a project to do after The Secret Garden, actually, I knew I wanted to do something Russian, because it really had not been done a great deal in the musical theater. And I grew up with the sound of, my father's a pianist, I grew up with Tchaikovsky and Rachmaninoff, with him playing at the piano, because those were his favorite composers. But to go back to the idea of Zhivago and finding the sound, I had to listen to a lot of Russian music. I'm going to play a little bit of what I came up with for the love song of Lara and Zhivago. When I decided to do Zhivago, everybody said, "But what are you going to do with that dee dee da da dee 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 dee," which is 18 bars of music that goes through the entire movie, and it's quite wonderful. But I had to find my own voice, so I sort of went with this. Lucky enough to have Marin Mazzi and Brian Stokes Mitchell do a demo for me.
Lift your eyes, look into my own. As the daylight dies soft against the hill, a night bird cries somewhere in the distance, and time stands still.
As the moonlight falls on the sill. Grains of sand trickle through a glass and time stands still. There is nothing, no one but us in all the world, in all the universe. Feel my heart pounding like your own as we stop, then start the way you lovers will. Years depart as if they never happened, and time stands still. There is nothing, no.
Beautiful, lovely, lovely Thank arrangement you. Too. There is a song in the show that you've played me called "Let It Be." No connection with
no Beatles,
with
right?
The Beatles.
How can you write a song called "Let It Be"?
But it's a very good example, Lucy, of the thing that always fascinates me about melodists is when they find that moment, that turn in the melody that makes it special, that makes it live. And I heard this on a demo, and you saw the marks I made on the demo, original demo, of the two songs that hit me in the face straight away. Can we play that little section of it just to illustrate?
The one that captured your heart, and melodically. Now, Edward, you have been, since you heard The Secret Garden, a great supporter of mine, and I really appreciate it. And the thing that you are appreciating is that I do have an original melodic feel, and it's whenever you hear that you say, yes, that's what I want. So this is a song that you marked that has that feel, although it's sort of a Schubertian song, I think.
And perhaps I could actually pinpoint for the listeners the
yes.
moment that... You
and
know.
I'm going to ask Michael to play this on the piano, and I'll sing just that part.
Okay.
Time, let's not rush. Oh, Lara, if only hush. Let it go, let it go, let it be.
Okay, you know, the part that you love.
Is
let it go, let it rest. I think it's the right word there. Let it be.
So it's on the let it rest that it does a different change.
Let it go, let it rest, let it be.
Yes, that is precisely the moment. Thank you so much, Lucy. It's been a real pleasure sharing your music in a way that makes us feel that we're actually a part of the composition, you know? This is the first time we've tried this on this show, and we want to do a lot more of it. But thank you for being the first.
Well, it's a great joy for me to be with you and also to bring my Michael Kosser in, who was so much a part of the development of The Secret Garden, really was a partner. As he said, he was, you know, my editor, you know, on writing the songs. And then to have the great joy of having Philip Quast come in as my guest. So thank you very much for asking all of us.
Your eyes, your face, amazing.
Yuri.
Amazing what they do.
Yuri.
And how I can't stop looking at you.
I think I'll go find you some coffee. Yes, yes, you need some coffee.
Your mouth, your voice, amazing.
Yuri, you are being very silly.
The phrasing, yes, that too.
Yuri.
As if the sounds you're making are new. Something in me sings, something in me dies. Lara, oh, Lara, please.
Shh. Time, let's not rush.
Oh, Lara, if only.
Hush, let it wait, let it float, let it be. Let it rest, let it go.
You never did we mean to.
No. Something just, maybe not, let it be. Maybe the morning will tell us what to do. But tonight I can't breathe.
You too.
Let's not leap.
I want.
I know, but it will keep. Let it go. Go to sleep. There.